know that you're wrong? What do you do when you know that you know that you know that you're wrong? You got to face the music. You got to listen to the gospel song. You got to face the music. You got to listen to the gospel song. What do you do when you know that you know that you know that you're wrong? What do you do when you know that you know that you know that you're wrong?
Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner.
And I'm Leah Gilmore.
And that must mean it's time for Cultural Crossroads.
That's right. Another month of wonderful cultural stuff.
And we came back with an incredible piece that kind of starts our conversation off by Sun Ra, because we are going to delve into the world of Afrofuturism here.
Oh, yeah.
The first part of this program. And we are joined in studio. We have two incredible people with us.
We do.
Black Star's in the house.
Peace and light, Black Star right here.
Black Star's
good to have
right.
you with us. Baltimore-based DJ, producer, singer, artist, produced Baltimore Club classics like Rider Girl, Hands Up, Thumbs Down, and Tote It. Next release, the Trinity EP, is coming out Monday.
Yeah.
And he has done pieces for artists across this country, huge named artists.
That's right.
Have picked up the Baltimore sound as part of
That's
their sound.
Right. He's made Baltimore very proud.
Yeah. And Itasha Womack joins us by phone, author, filmmaker, dancer, and author of the book Afrofuturism, the World of Black Sci-Fi and Fantasy. And Natasha, welcome. Good to have you with us as well.
Thank you.
Hi, Natasha. It's thrilling
Yatasha.
To... Yatasha. That's even better. It's great to meet you.
Oh, it's a pleasure. This is exciting.
It is. It's very exciting.
And as you hear the conversation unfold, you can join us at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. You can log on to our Facebook pages and... have at it there, but 410-319-8888 as we kind of explore this world of Afrofuturism, which we've done a little bit about in the past, and it's just such an exciting thought and concept, the idea that began in the 1990s. Right. Why don't we let Yatasha kind of lead us off?
Yeah, I will. Yatasha, I actually have a question for you before you lead us off, because I am from the school of like Parliament and Funkadelic, and LaBelle and Sun Ra, they were all a little before me. So does Afrofuturism kind of build on the foundation that they began?
Yes, it does. And actually, Parliament Funkadelic and Sun Ra and LaBelle and Earth, Wind & Fire, they're all referenced as really the founders of sorts of what we now call Afrofuturism.
Yeah, where did that term come from?
Well, the term was created by a culture critic named Mark Berry, who in the early 90s was one of several people who recognized that there was a relationship between science fiction and black culture, not to mention a lot of people who were just very excited about science fiction who were black but didn't see their images in the films and a lot of the literature that was created. And yet there's a lineage and a culture of people of African descent who were either creating science fiction or expressing their interest in science and technology through the arts. Parliament Funkadelic and the whole mythology that they created with the starship or really the mothership and so forth.
I love it.
One example of that. Yeah.
With Sun Ra, that great quote from someone, I never wanted to be part of planet Earth.
Right.
But I'm compelled to be here. So anything I do for this planet is because the master creator of the universe is making me do it. I am of another dimension. I am on this planet because people need me.
There you go.
Right.
Sun Ra was way ahead. I don't know if you say ahead of his time because we're futurism, but it's hard to say.
It's both.
But it's fascinating. Yeah, please continue, Yatasha.
Yeah, well, Sun Ra is really interesting. Of course, he came of age in my hometown of Chicago, which
I like. Yeah,
but he is always referenced by people who are in literature, people who are visual artists. He may well be more popular now than he ever was when he was creating music, because so much of his poetry, his art, his music and his approach to looking at life is frequently referenced in a lot of the newer materials that artists are creating today.
Right.
But, you know, Afrofuturism, a lot of times people ask me, what is it? And I like to say that it's the intersection between black culture, technology, the imagination, and liberation. And whether you're really into sci-fi or not, I think that people can look at the role of the imagination in Black culture to really transcend your circumstances.
Oh, what? So well said.
Really?
Yeah.
So well said, yes.
Blackstar, I'm curious, because I mean, you're of a younger generation as well.
Yeah.
And this is kind of...
Much younger.
Which is where it's coming from.
It is.
Right?
Yeah, you can say.
Or how it keeps going, or how it perpetually keeps going.
Exactly, exactly. Right. I was just speaking with a friend the other day, and we were saying how past, present, future is one, you know.
I love it. Your trinity.
Exactly.
Your
exactly.
trinity.
Past, right. present, future, mind, body, spirit, you know. Like, you know, that's the Holy Trinity. And that's what I'm expressing in the music. And letting them know the dimensions of one, you know.
I mean, so do you feel consciously like part of a movement or of an artistic movement, like this Afrofuturistic world? You feel? Do you feel part of it?
I feel
consciously,
subconsciously, a part of a way, way bigger picture. Like, you know how they it is that
right.
God, what God has in mind for us is way beyond our imagination. Of what we can ever imagine. And the term Afrofuturism is pretty new to me. I just heard about it from this event, but I knew the culture, but I just never was familiar with the title of it. You know, I knew the culture from, like, you know, Funkadelic and Sun Ra and Patti LaBelle, but I never actually researched the title Afrofuturism until this event, which is going to be on Saturday at the warehouse. And I'm starting to, you know, put the puzzle pieces in place and saying, wow, I was digging this style all my life. And,
right. It was your style before you had a label for it.
Exactly.
It was already there.
Exactly. Right.
But what's interesting about that, Black Star, is I did the same thing when we talked about Afrofuturism and being from another generation. Mm-hmm. I was a huge, huge Prince fan and Funkadelic and LaPel. And, you know, these are how I learned to sing. I used to imitate Patti LaBelle, you know, all the time, you know. Not well. And then I listened to your wonderful song, The River.
The River. Okay.
And the influences that Prince had on you.
Mm-hmm.
And that you, I think your EP is coming out with an acoustic guitar version of When Doves Cry. How do you see, it was difficult for me to see it too as a thing, as a big, this is Afrocentrism, I mean futurism.
Mm-hmm.
Where do you see your place in it and how, making it grow, or just your place?
And my place in, well, I am a part of evolution, you know. If you think about the word me, the two letters involved in the word me is M-E, and that stands for to me, manifesting evolution. You know, so when people ask me, who am I? I say, I am me. And then I break it down to them and let them know what me and who me is, manifesting evolution. So my part I play is to evolve what was already there and kind of sort of expand the perception on all things I kind of sort of engage into, you know. And I would say... that would be the way I describe my flow.
Manifest the evolution. It sounds good to me.
So, this weekend, this happening is happening.
That's right.
When is it? It's Saturday, right?
This Saturday, the 29th. From Ends to Gods.
From Ends to Gods.
Yes.
And what's gonna
happen? Where is it?
Is at the spot called The Warehouse. The actual information details, I had it here, but yeah, but you can check my social networks at Blackstar, that's BLAQSTARRR, and the info will be there.
And also on Mark's website, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And you will be performing.
Yes, I will. It's all right here. It's at Warehouse Baltimore, 1400 Warner Street B, and it's going to be, you know, highlighting Afrofuturism in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm.
And doors open at 7 o'clock, so it starts at 8. More information at mer-dj-media-group@gmail.com.
Yeah, you can't miss this one. Yeah.
And all that will be on our website.
That's right. You got to come out.
It's going to be funky.
It's going to be funky.
It's going to be good.
The mothership. The second mothership will be coming down, huh?
The thing about it, my mom used to listen to Prince and Funkadelic in the morning. Yeah. It's like we getting ready for school, but I kind of sort of didn't like it back then. you know, because I was always hearing it, you know. Right. So, but as I got older, you know, I got the comparisons, the Prince, and so right. I said, man, how y'all compare me to Prince? I ain't this black star. Like, and then I just started to accept it and allow it to flow, and it turned into me actually understanding me. I'm manifesting evolution.
Right. And then you become your own self.
Exactly.
You know, it's a wonderful thing from our ancestors that, you know, we learn to become us.
Exactly.
From that, you know. Mm-hmm. Yatasha, tell us a little bit about your book.
Sure. Well, the book is really geared for people who were Afrofuturists and didn't realize they were Afrofuturists. Mm-hmm. As Black Star and as you mentioned, you know, a lot of these ideas, whether they're philosophical or they're tied into the music you were familiar with, but had not heard of the term itself.
Right.
So when I discovered the term a couple years ago, I thought it would be great to write a book on it, because sometimes people, it just gives them a greater sense of belonging when they see that not only is there a culture that's a part of Afrofuturism, but there's a lineage to it as well, whether you want to talk about, you know, some of the technology from ancient African cultures, you know, with the Dogon or the Egyptians and some of their perspectives. Or if you want to look at the fact that W.E.B. Du Bois wrote a science fiction story, or that
right.
Martin
Luther King right. was
actually
sure did.
A Star Trek fan.
Or right. I mean, King did what? I'm sorry, we talked over you. I'm sorry, King did what?
Oh, he's a Star Trek fan.
Uh-huh.
Right. So am I.
And he actually convinced the woman who played Uhura to keep her role when she wanted to quit, because he felt like she was such an inspiration to people. And
that's what we didn't see black folks in sci-fi.
Exactly.
You know, we loved it, but where were we?
Right. And so, you know, the fact that so many people are excited about creating images of ourselves in the future is not a new interest. Mm-hmm. And so in putting together the book, I was really hoping to show the many approaches that people of African descent have had to creating what we might call science fiction or fantasy, or look at some of their perspectives on, say, time travel, and looking at a lot of the newer work that people are doing today as well. Even the technology innovations in hip-hop, using, you know, the breakbeat and sampling, or looking at house music. All of these are reflections of interest that some of the futurists had when they were looking at how can you create music and not use the instruments of the day? And the futurists were, you know, different Europeans who, you know, from the 20s or the teens in our last century, who were just making those explorations. And you have people today who are very much creating music, not using instruments. You know, so all of this has a very sci-fi relevance to it. You also have theorists who like to talk about the black experience in the Americas being akin to the alien experience when you're looking at movies.
Right.
That's very interesting. Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Using that as a metaphor. Right. So,
Yatasha, this not only a it's not only a musical movement though, but it's also a literary movement, right. Visual art. I mean, even Basquiat, and I look at his things, his paintings, and I think this is definitely something that looks like Afrofuturism. And also, I am a huge, huge fan of Octavia Butler. She changed the world for me, because I thought, where are the black people in the science fiction? And there was she writing brilliant books like Parable of the Sower and so many other. Are there writers out there now who you would recognize, writers and artists out there now who you would recognize as Afrofuturistic?
Yes, there are many. One of the more popular artists that people like to talk about is Janelle Monáe.
Oh, yes, she's great.
You can reference, you know, in music, of course, is Erykah Badu or Outkast that people are familiar with. As far as visual artists go, there's Wanichi Mutu, who just had a show at the Brooklyn Museum of Art.
Right.
There's a John Jennings or Stacey Robinson, who did the Black Kirby exhibit.
Oh, yes.
There's a lot of visual artists, actually, who are creating. A lot of people in comic books as well. If you go to some of these comic cons, you'll see that there are quite a few black artists who are putting together comic books and branding around different characters, a Kamau Mashewe, or quite a few people. I mean, it's really, it almost becomes a bottomless pit.
Once you know what it is.
Right. Exactly. As far as writers, you have Annette Okorafor, who's a fairly newer writer. And you can just go on and on. I mean, it's really interesting. It's a lot of great works that are out there. As a matter of fact, I just received a book called Paradoxa on African science fiction that was edited by Mark Bull, which I'm looking forward to reading. There's another
book. Could you say that book again?
Sure. It's called Paradoxa.
Okay.
Paradoxa. Mm-hmm. On African science fiction that I just received. There's another book called Nigerians in Space, which is actually a contemporary piece that I just received recently. And, you know, I have a book coming out called Rewa 2212 about a woman who lives, you know, on a planet 200 years into the future. So,
Oh, that's great.
So we'll look forward to that one.
That's right.
To come back a bit to Black Star, first let's do a little piece here. Mm-hmm. We want to hear the piece Dear Diamond that features Common that you did.
Yeah.
And just to get a feel for Black Star's sound and come right back.
Beautiful.
You are so fine, you. I came to find you. The lost should find you. It wasn't easy to find you. Been on my mind for so long. Don't want to let go, so hold on. You got the lines to both phones. It's like I'm writing your song. Sing it, sing it. It lingered, lingered. We dream and believe it, and all of us need it. We never too young to receive it. Things that we go through, thinking that I owe you something like my soul knew. I was supposed to hold you. Come
Black Star.
And yeah. Go ahead. All right.
So I'm curious. I think also we have someone else who's going to be at the festival this weekend is on the phone with us. More Mother Goddess is on the phone. Welcome to the show.
Welcome.
Everyone.
Good to have you with us.
Hello.
So Black Star, I just want to talk a bit about the music for a second and come back to the other parts beyond music in this Afrofuturist world. So I'm curious, as you develop this and hear all these other artists doing this work.
Mm-hmm.
What role is this going to play, do you think, in the future of music? Literally. I mean, where is it taking it and changing it?
Is developing into more and more boundlessness, you know? Like the fearless aspect of actually pushing the envelope when you're actually creating. There's no, like, lines or confinements, you know? Like, hip-hop is not just rapping a certain way, you know?
Talk about it.
Exactly,
yeah.
You know? And
exactly.
When we speak of labels, it's almost like, that's why I'm digging the Afrofuturism culture, because it's almost like when you try to define it, it's so many levels and so many dimensions of it, it's safe to say it's almost the new hip-hop, you know?
Right.
You know, the future.
Right.
And there seems to be an intellectualism surrounding it that really hasn't surrounded our music before. I mean, I mean, definitely it's always been a part of it, but a social justice edge to it, you know?
Yeah.
I've got, and a spirituality to it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's all woven together. I think it's a very exciting time.
Me too.
One of the things I've been noticing about it all, especially with the exhibit at the Studio Museum in Harlem on Afrofuturism, mm-hmm. was that it brings together the diaspora in the West and the soul of new artists in Africa coming together, and it's uniting something that really wasn't united artistically before in a lot of ways, in a kind of deeper, more profound way, because it's
uniting it differently because there has been unification before.
But I mean something that, because you know, what this is doing is putting together past, present, future that you were talking about, Black Star. Mm-hmm. I was thinking that one of the artists in that exhibit in New York was Edgar Arsenault, who put this piece together where it was just an amazing piece. He put together this piece that were these montages of the rebellion in 67 in Detroit, and then it was these overwhelming waves that came through it, literally ocean waves,
mm-hmm.
and underneath of it was this world that was created in the Middle Passage by people who went overboard and created this underworld civilization. Mm-hmm. And just the whole idea of uniting all these things in ways that kind of tell history, talk about the future, what could be, what may be, who knows what is.
Well, that's the beauty, again, of his Trinity, because this the concept of the Trinity, because this really has been around a long time, and it has now been given a word, a theme, Afrocentrism. When I think of looking at Joyce Scott's work, her early beating work, and how she has used science fiction themes to talk about slavery and our positions now, and how you use music to talk about, you know, what's inside of you, but also about us. It's about me and it's about us. So I think that is really profound. The young lady on the phone.
Yes, I want to get more Mother Goddess.
So Mother, I love your, the name is off the hook.
Thank you.
It's
thank
beautiful, you. Young lady. Tell us what you will be doing this weekend.
Yes, what I do with More Mother Goddess is I basically take an approach as Zora Neale Hurston would do. And what I like to call my stuff is spiritual anthropology. And I like to take on the aspects of Afrofuturism. I feel like as far as a black woman DIY artist, I feel like that's what we have right now. Otherwise, we are unnoticed, you know. I'm a part of the Afrofuturist Affair. And we're one of the leading sources right now, you know, to go to for Afrofuturism, you know, and it's run by, you know, a single parent, Rashida Phillips. And it's always, you know, a struggle. It's always a struggle to be about Afrofuturism and then have artists who are not necessarily Afrofuturists, but also climb into that genre, you know, and sometimes it takes away from the essence of what we're really trying to do as far as seeking answers about ourselves and push and keep pushing ourselves artistically, you know? Mm-hmm. So I'm just excited. I'm just excited for all these underground artists that's been doing so-called weird things. You know, I believe we have,
That's what happened when I played my Sun Ra records, you know? My dad was like, what is this weird stuff going on?
Yes.
So congratulations to everything you're doing. And it seems like Baltimore seems to be a little bit of a hub for this. Black Star, what do you think about that?
I definitely appreciate the expansion points that Baltimore are incorporating in the movement. You know, there are becoming more outlets for new talent and different talents and stuff and different ways of expressing art. And I just commend it. I want to keep pushing it and rooting it on, you know, the flow.
Yeah.
You know, so go ahead. Is this Yatasha?
Support it.
Hello?
Who's this
mother? Actually, I think that was More Mother who was trying.
Okay, go ahead, More Mother. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just going to say the creator of the event in Baltimore is Civil Jones, who is actually my best friend from high school, and we had her come up to participate in some Afrofuturist Affair events, and she just was blown. She was saying that Baltimore really needs this presence, you know, and through her investigating and, you know, coming up with this event, we found out that Baltimore is ready, and there are artists, you know, that fit into this, you know, I hate saying genre, but fit into this movement.
This world.
Of black artists redefining themselves. And I find out that it's everywhere. I mean, we were just at the Bucknell University. We put on the Afrotopia event. And, you know, that's in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. There's nothing but cows out there.
Yeah, we know what Bucknell is.
They were hungry for it, you know?
Right.
And I just, you know, I'm blessed to be able to go into these spaces and find that, you know, those artists, you know, because even in Afrofuturism, we tend to sometimes share the same five artists, you know?
Mm-hmm, right.
Mm-hmm. And there's so many more of us, you know, that are struggling to get this art out, you know?
And I wish we had more time with this. This is something we need to do many more hours on. Because as I was listening to everybody speak in the course of this conversation now and hearing what Yatasha was saying earlier and all of our other guests, in some ways, kind of the seeds of how our future should look are in the artistry of the people who are creating this gigantic amorphous world through of Afrofuturism through music and art and sculpture and writing. And it's just that it's speaking to where the world could be, where it comes from, where it could be.
That's right.
That's the kind of beauty and power of this. That's why I think this particular movement is about to explode.
Right.
I have a feeling this is going to explode and be a major kind of artistic social movement that is only beginning to be heard from.
Yeah.
And I think this weekend.
Well, I definitely think so.
And this weekend you can hear more from them. Let me tell you how to get there. You can go to mayordjmediagroup@gmail.com. That's MERDJ Media Group, one word, mayordjmediagroup@gmail.com. This weekend, Warehouse Baltimore, 14 Warren Street B. Just highlighting Afrofuturism in our city. People come from all over the country, artists from locally, like Black Star will be there as well. And all the folks on our program are all there as well. So it'll be on our website. And the show starts, doors open at 7. Show starts at 8.
That's right. Black Star be on.
I will be on.
That's right. So will
Natasha Womack and more Mother Goddess.
That's right.
Yes, I'll be starting the show off.
Oh, wonderful.
Beautiful.
So,
wonderful.
You know.
Well, this is extremely exciting. I mean, as an artist and as the mother of a son who sings in this, his name is Jonathan Gilmore.
Johnny.
And I know, it's incredible. it's like, I can't imagine. I look at you, I see my son, and I'm only 25, so it's a miracle.
now that's an Afrofuturist event.
Yeah.
For a 25-year-old to have a 20-year-old child. That's good.
Science fiction, we can use this.
We can use that.
We can use it.
So we're going to go out to this break hearing Black Stars River, which is
this is beautiful.
Lovely piece.
Trinity EP.
I love this piece.
Yes.
Monday. And I want to thank
He has to say, when is it coming out?
Oh, it drops Monday.
That's right.
March 31st. Trinity EP.
Hey, we'll have you back for that.
It's a beautiful piece.
More Mother Goddess and
Yatasha,
Black Star. Good to have the three of you with us, and we will be
I'll
post on our website so you can link to all their work and see what they're doing and read their books and feel their stuff.
So inspirational.
Thank you all so much.
Thank you all.
Thank you. Don't think bad way. Won't think my way. Don't drown in don't think bad way. Won't think my way. Don't drown in sin. Don't drown in sin. Don't think bad way. Won't think my way. Don't drown in sin. Yeah. I asked a question like this. Are we a lost generation of our people? Equations, but they'll never make us equal. She who writes the movie on the script and the sequel. So why ain't the stealing of my rights made illegal? They keep us underground, working hard for the greedy. But when it's time to pay, they turn around and call us needy. My crown too heavy, like the Queen Nefertiti. Give me back my pyramid. I'm trying to free Kansas City. Mix and masterminds like your name, Bernie Grubbin. Well, I'ma keep leading like a young Harry Dubbin. You can take my wings, but I'm still gonna fly. And even when you added me, the booty don't lie. Yeah, I keep singing, I'ma keep writing songs. Streets, cause I'm willing and I'm able. Categorize me, I defy every label. And while you're selling dope, we gonna keep selling hope. We rising up now, you got a deal, you got a cope. Right now.
Welcome back.
That's it. That's what we're talking about.
Janelle Monae.
Yeah,
queen.
She's absolutely amazing. And I didn't know she was part of this whole Afrofuturistic movement as well, even though I absolutely adored her individualism. That's what I thought of her. I thought, here's a woman who's doing her own thing.
Well, she is.
She is. And if you check out, though, her Metropolis video, it's an EP. It's an album. But if you check out her EP, it is so indicative of what we've been talking about.
And it derives partially from the movie that was made in the 1930s called Metropolis. It's part of that.
Yeah, that whole thing.
It's the Afro version of that movie.
That's right. Because you know what? No one else was going to do it. I mean, I am so happy that this is happening, because there have been, I know a young lady here in Baltimore who is absolutely a brilliant film director, Kalima Young, I'm calling you out, and she does science fiction for about LGBT community, and it's pure science fiction. She's an African American sister.
I know Kalima.
She owns her. Yes, sir. You know Kalima. That's right. We both know her. And she is definitely another person who's part of this. Walter Mosley, who's known for fiction, you know, he wrote a sci-fi book called The Wave, which was brilliant. I read it, you know.
I mean, Kalima was on our last Cultural Crossroads together.
She sure was, about something else.
Right.
That's how we all are. We're all like schizophrenic.
She's amazing.
So I think that this is really an exciting thing to be doing.
And you haven't watched it yet, but I'm encourage people. We're talking about mm-hmm. what you've been looking at lately. Preparing for this program, I stumbled across these Afrofuturistic films that a lot of them are made by Ghanaian and Kenyan filmmakers. And there was this one.
Which is excellent within itself.
Yeah. No,
okay.
And so this one is called Pumsy. And done by this Kenyan woman filmmaker. And it is an amazing film about a world where water is scarce and how she has to, she has these dreams and finds a way out of the underground existence they live in. It's just an amazing short film. There's all these pieces
right.
out like that. This Ghanaian filmmaker, mostly that I found from Ghana and Kenya, but... And they're making these connections. They were just all at the Studio Museum.
But you know what's so on point about that? Because if you travel, especially in Kenya and in the Ghanaian worlds and any world of developing countries, water is scarce. I mean, we take water for granted like you would not believe here. The fact that we can go to a spigot or whatever we call it now,
right.
turn it on. I can't know. My father knew those words. Turn it on.
Spigot.
Spigot. And the water comes out is a luxury. It is a luxury to the majority of the folks in the world. Water is golden. So I love the fact that there are filmmakers who are doing this with a world without water, because it's not an impossibility. I know I just made that right word up.
An impossibility.
Impossibility.
So one thing that's interesting, we're going to talk about music here for a moment, the stuff you and I have been listening to.
Yeah, what have we been checking out?
And let's talk a bit about one of those women now. And while we're doing it, we can line up some of the music, because I know they have that ready.
Mm-hmm.
They have a whole list there. They have to kind of get ready to line up. And let's go to Sister Rosetta Tharpe for a minute.
Oh, yes.
And we talked about her the other day, because March 20th was her birthday.
And, you know, I've been talking about her because this is Women's History Month.
Right.
And she also used to be a fishing partner of my grandmother.
Really?
That's right.
A fishing partner of your
That's
grandmother?
Right. She and my grandmother used to fish together.
There? North Carolina?
North Carolina. No, I was not born.
I know you were. No, I know you were. So I'm saying it was North Carolina.
Yeah, that's right. Let's talk about her musically, because she was a trailblazer. She was one of the first gospel superstars, along with Mahalia Jackson.
Right.
She was one of the most creative guitarists who influenced Johnny Cash, Bob Dylan. They all reference her. Eric Clapton, they all reference her as her picking style. And she was, you know, kind of condemned from the church a little bit because she sang Sunday night and Saturday morning.
And she was, you know, people call her the real mother of rock and roll.
I would call her that.
Before rock and roll even began.
That's right.
Folks, listen, this is Sister Rosetta Tharpe. We'll come right back.
Mm-hmm.
Count the glory. Everybody around here. To be holy, because this train is a clean train, this train. But this train don't pull no liars, this train. You got to get off. This train don't pull no liars, this train.
Listen to that. Listen to that.
And while we were on the air, of course, Leah Gilmore is singing the song because she sings this in her repertoire as well.
It's one of the songs I'm singing. I love to sing. But listen to the blues in it. You can hear the blue notes in it. I mean, gospel comes from the blues, not the other way around. You know, and that's shocking to many people. But Sister Rosetta Tharpe was an expert at both. And she was genuinely one of the superstars of gospel music. And I would say definitely the mother of rock and roll. I love that.
She is the mother of rock and
roll. That's right. But, you know, so often rock and roll is so whitewashed, literally. Literally.
What you're hearing under right now is that's all. Can continue. I mean, listen for a second, folks, this guitar riff.
Oh, yes.
The natural facts that a man don't understand a good book right, and that's all. That's all. You know what? We got to have more love, more understanding every day of our lives, and that's all. See folks jump from this or that. They don't know where in the devil they're at. And that's all.
Now, see,
we're missing her guitar.
Because that was just coming back.
Yeah.
If you hear the guitar, just pop it up real loud and drown us out. So I can tell you this guitar riff. The thing about Rosetta Tharpe is, when you listen to her music, her guitar riffs, clearly the blues are there, but it is what rock and roll became. You hear the jazz trumpets in the background. You hear it slide in from what becomes rock and roll to the church that she started in, all in this one package, you know?
Because rock and roll, she did, rock and roll was that one package. Rock and roll was the church sound. It was the blues. I mean, when you listen to Little Richard and you listen to Jerry Lee Lewis, I mean, it's this Jerry Lee Lewis and Elvis hang out at juke joints,
right.
You know, but during this period, you know, this very segregated period, we had to call it something else and package black folk music a different way, and it became rock and roll, and it has been clearly defined a certain way from then on.
But what I was saying is that her guitar riffs that that you hear in her pieces are the riffs that became the 50s rock and roll riffs.
Right.
That's what I mean.
Yeah, I was just going more political with it. I was agreeing with you.
No, I understand. I understand. I'm just saying that you can. That's why she is the godmother.
And they
of rock and roll.
And the musicians are the ones who acknowledge that. They acknowledge her. I mean, they talk about Johnny Cash talked about her for a long time. You know, I mean, when quoting about his influences, he spoke of a Sister Rosetta Tharpe. As did Elvis.
Because the world doesn't know her.
Well, the world should know
her. They don't know her.
Yeah, but why doesn't the world know her? It's the reason why, a very young white singer saves soul music and is put on the cover of Rolling Stone, and Jill Scott isn't. That's the reason the world doesn't know her. It's structural.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's institutional.
And it's also about her being a woman.
That's still structural, and that's still institutional.
I'm not saying it's not. You know, I'm saying that the fact that she's a woman is why you hear more about people like Little Richard and other people, and you don't hear about Sister Rosetta Tharpe. You don't hear her sound like she. You don't hear Big Mama Thornton sound. You don't hear. You know. You don't.
I think a lot has to do with them being black too, and it's structural and it's institutional.
And I'm going to say it to you that I think it's both. And
okay.
I think the fact that you hear more black men's music. As part of the roots music, you don't hear the women's voices as part of the roots
music. Oh, you know I agree with that, as in, because I am actually writing a book about that one. So you know, I definitely agree. That's how I got involved with women in the blues.
Right.
Because women are often left out of the story of the blues.
That was your story in Mississippi when you did your stint there as a scholar, right?
That's right. Right. That's right. That's right. And they're often left out. But I'm saying there is also, I mean, Little Richard is left out of the storyline a lot of time, too. And so is Louis Jordan. I mean, without Louis Jordan, he is the direct bridge to rock and roll.
Right.
And I don't hear his name
as much as
I hear Elvis. So there are structural and institutional issues that are definitely a part of all of it.
You just do a whole segment just on the roots of rock and roll.
That's it.
You know, I'm serious.
Seriously.
To hear, because
right.
To hear it musically. There's another piece I want to play here for a moment. Let's cue up that piece that I was talking about from Roberta Flack's First Take, because we did a piece on this the other day. I've been listening to this album over and over again over the last week.
Oh, Roberta Flack.
Yeah, because
she's one of my absolute favorites.
This album came out in 69 and didn't happen. And then and I bought this album in San Francisco in 1969 because just a year earlier, when she was teaching high school, I saw her play at the Bohemian Caverns in D.C. And I fell in love with this woman's voice. Who never heard of her before. Nobody did, right? She wasn't famous then. And then I pick up this album and go, First Take. I said, this is the woman from D.C.
Yes.
And this particular song was written by this Venezuelan poet, Lorca, who is white. And it's a Spanish song, but it's about black angels. And if you love life and love people, you can't say you love God unless you understand the black angels and the power they have. And that's what she's singing about in this poem that this man wrote, who was a white revolutionary poet from Venezuela, who wrote this song fighting racism in his own way in the song. And that's what this song is about.
That's what we do in the arts.
Angelitos negros angelitos, black angels. And it's just, when I first heard this song, it was like,
Roberta Flack. she's perfect.
Let's play just for a second. We'll come right back.
Todos los negritos buenos. Lindas y lindas con amor, porque deprecias su color. Si sabes que en el cielo también los quiere Dios. Pintor de sandos de alcoba. Si tienes alma en el cuerpo, ¿por qué al pintor en tus cuadros te olvidaste de los negros? Siempre que pintas iglesias, píntame.
Andres, breathtaking.
I had the name wrong. Andres Eloy Blanco was the name of the poet from
Venezuela.
From Venezuela, who wrote this thing.
Breathtaking.
Back in the 40s or 30s, he wrote this poem.
What she does with music is absolutely amazing. I mean, I listened to her. I was 3 in 1969, but my mom was a huge Roberta Flack fan. And Roberta Flack, she comes through the generations, up to mine, past to my sons. And I listened to her sing The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. And I performed with Peggy Seeger, Bob Seeger, Seeger's sister for a while. And the song was supposedly written by her, by a Scottish man who fell in love with Peggy. And he wrote this song, The First Time Ever I Saw Your Face. And when I heard Roberta Flack sing it,
it was a whole different world.
It was a whole different world. When you say someone owns a song, and I said, this is an easy song. I'm going to try to sing this. Someone asked me to sing it. And I struggled through the whole thing. She truly is amazing. Now, what I've been listening to.
Yes, I was about to ask you that.
I've been listening to, this is Women's History Month, and I do like social media, and on my Facebook page, I've been featuring a different woman every day, so I've been listening to a lot of women performers and a lot of women singers, and one of my favorite is Dinah Washington. I've been listening to a lot of Dinah Washington, and she was a huge fan of Bessie Smith, as was Mahalia Jackson, and I love her songs from Dinah sings Bessie Smith. I think we're going to listen to one right now.
Right now.
Don't break my aching heart. loved me true for many years. Loved you night and day, can't you see my tears? How can you leave me? Listen while I say, after you've gone and left me crying, after you've gone,
after you've gone.
At the top of the last hour, we played Sarah Vaughan because this is her birthday, another one of the great.
The great greats of the great.
That voice was like silk.
Oh, if you've heard Frank Sinatra talk about Sarah Vaughan and Ella Fitzgerald, he said, I'm paraphrasing something, like you said, just makes me want to cut my throat or something like that. But these women, these amazing women singers, were respected by their fellow musicians. If the world did not respect them so much, the musicians did.
Yes. Right, right. Yes.
You know?
Yes, yes.
And that is something that we still find in music, you know. There's in the artistic mind, there is somehow, and I am grossly making a comment that is mine and I'm owning it.
What's that?
Okay. But there is a mind. I'm owning it now.
What is it?
There is. I'm not going to cuss.
Please don't cuss. Don't cuss. No,
I know. I'm not going to do that.
Get his phone right off the air.
That's right. I don't do that anyway.
Of course not. Right. You would never do that.
I would never do that.
Never.
But, you know, within the artist community, there is an openness that I have found being a part of the community and being a part of I'm also a policy analyst, and so I've been part of other communities as well. But as an artist, there is an openness and an understanding and an acceptance and a want to know about other cultures.
Oh, yeah.
To hear about other cultures and to respect other cultures equitably. We assign those who are the writers and the critics assign high culture and low culture and that culture. It is not the artists who are doing that.
Oh, no, it never is. And I think that there's people calling. Let's get the phone here. And maybe people want to tell us what they're listening to at 410-319-8888.
Right.
And I, on the way there, let me just say, when I go to Ezel's call, is part of it because people who are artists, who are singers, who are painters, they understand all the things that fed into who they are.
That's right.
In ways others don't. Ezel, I'm sorry, you're on the air.
Hi, Ezel.
Ezel, what you got to tell us?
How you doing, Mark?
Ezel, is this the drummer?
Yes, it is.
Oh, sweetheart, how are you?
Ezel Jones.
I am well.
Oh, my goodness, it's so good to hear your voice.
Oh, my, I haven't heard from you. I haven't seen you in almost about 5 years.
Yeah,
so it's been a while.
He's a remarkable drummer. Remarkable. Yeah.
And Mark, we met over at the Creative Alliance.
That's right.
You know, if you remember, yeah. But you guys left out one. I heard you talking about the rock and roll thing.
Mm-hmm.
You left out one other person, Chuck Berry.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. You've Chuck got it. Berry. You've got it.
Chuck Berry, he took it to the level. He gave Hendrix the idea to take it on to where Hendrix
was. Okay.
You know?
So, and Hendrix started out in a blues band, you know, and with James Brown.
Yes. Yes, he did.
And Buddy Guy.
He did. He started from all those roots. And even today, I still play a lot of blues.
Oh, so yeah.
I am well aware of the history of it, and I really appreciate this conversation between us.
Thank you, Ezel.
All right.
He's a great blues drummer,
yes,
man.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Yes, he is.
Oh,
we're gonna have to hook up.
Yes. Yes, yes. I need to get your information, and we need to talk. Okay.
So, Ezel, why don't you leave your phone number and email with our producer, and I'll make sure I'll have it. I'll make sure that Leah has it after we get off the air.
Most definitely, we definitely should connect.
He is one of the great drummers.
He is one of the great drummers.
Amazing.
In Baltimore.
Yes.
Just a phenomenal feeler of the music, you know. And when he says he knows a lot about the blues, he means it.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. And on and on and on.
And you would know.
I don't know. Yeah, yeah. I would know. I love it.
So tell me what else you've been for. Now, before I go there, I mean, what else are you listening to that's really?
Well, we don't have to play this, but you know, I just got back from Siberia, and which is sounds like something so weird. Leah Gilmore just got back from Siberia, but I was performing. I had a few concerts there, and I met the Moscow Contemporary Music Ensemble, and they are just so phenomenal and so strange, you know, for me.
What do you mean, strange?
Well, to my ear, because I like, I'm used to a regular melody, you know, 1, 4, 5, even a 9 and 7 thrown in there kind of thing. But the contemporary ensemble takes music and they use music as an art form that I've never seen
before.
You're
talking about the Moscow Contemporary Music Ensemble? Mm-hmm. We have a little bit of that queued up, don't we? Let's hear a little bit of what you're talking about, can we?
Sure.
Let's do it.
I hope it's one of those strange ones.
We're about to find out. I think it is. Because my note from the producer says wild. Let's see it.
I would call that Russian futurism.
I'm going to call it cyber futurism.
But you know, what's intriguing about this, they are brilliant musicians who are experts at many genres. My pianist over there in Russia actually played gospel and blues for me, but he wrote the composition for the Moscow Contemporary Music Ensemble. That is brilliant. That sounds very, very much like that.
So this is these are classical musicians.
They're classical. They're jazz. They're all types of musicians. But they formed this ensemble to create contemporary music.
So they, it's sort of they like didn't play with you. You heard them play while you were there, though.
I went to their concert, but my pianist, who plays with me
when you're in Siberia, yeah,
wrote a composition for them. And that is why I was at their concert.
So we have like 2 minutes left in our segment, sister. So then we have credits.
I think we should go out with Happy.
Happy?
Pharrell's Happy because he makes me Pharrell's happy. Happy. I listen to it every morning.
And you'll make the station happy because they're about to have their Happy Fun Drive.
There you go.
So Happy is it.
Happy is all about WEAA 88.9.
Happy. So we will go out with that, and I have to thank my dear friend Leah Gilmore.
I'm so happy to be here with you.
It's always so much fun.
Okay.
You are such a trip. I love you. Good to have you
here. You are too, baby.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you.
Thank you, Leah Gilmore.
Thank you, Mark Steiner.
And we will come back to Afrofuturism in the near future.
Oh, yeah.
No pun intended. So I'll just tell you that. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. You can learn more about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's one word, MarylandEducators.org, or click on their banner on our website, the Maryland State Education Association. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Stephanie Mavronis and Mark Gunry. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Our intern is Alex Boston. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. You can hear the show again, find out information about our guests and all the work they're doing and what they're writing and the concerts they're giving by going to steinershow.org. You can also download and podcast all of our stuff on iTunes. And for public radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community.
There you go.
I'm happy.
I'm happy too.
And I'm Mark Steiner.
And I'm Leah Gilmore.
And take care. Be happy.
Your time. Here's why.